What you listening to, son?
Howdy, y'all, and welcome to Talking of the Hill, a podcast you come to rely on to help you through life. I'm your host, the handsome as a weatherman, Bob Mackey, and this is the Talking Simpsons Network's chronological exploration of King of the Hill, who is here with me today.
Henry Gilbert, and I blame the Muppets for this.
Oh, don't we all? And today's episode is Plastic White Female.
Well, Luann, it's a very nice hair.
Don't touch it!
Today's episode aired on May 11th, 1997. And as always, Henry will tell us what happened at this mythical point in real world history.
This is Hank Hill with the news.
Bobby! Pope John Paul II visits Lebanon. The Misfits released their first album without Glenn Danzig as the frontman. And it's Father's Day as America laughs at that Robin Williams Billy Crystal classic.
Oh no, what did that involve?
It kind of was my two dads.
Okay.
Like they both thought they were some kid's dad, or I think...
Oh, I remember Robin Williams rapping.
Yeah,
He was doing his famous rap character, R.I.P. of course, but he did go to the rapping guy very often, and Elmer Fudd. He was like one of the go-tos, and gay guy.
Yeah, gay guy, Elmer Fudd, black guy, a militant black guy did that too. He did all... Oh, God. Look, I love Robin Williams. I don't want to be mean to him.
We're going
to
be talking a lot about him very soon for What a Cartoon Movie.
But Father's Day, I mean, that was also an Ivan Reitman film. When I looked at Ivan Reitman's filmography, basically was the 90s was him just seeing if he could keep the 80s going. He's like, what if I just kept making, like, Twins and Ghostbusters again? He's got to make those movies, but none of them were hits. And then... The 2000s were a sadder time for him, and now his son just gets to inherit his movies and make a Ghostbusters film.
That guy. Yeah. What was Ivan Reitman doing in the 2000s?
You know, he put out years... No, that's Harold Ramis.
Yeah, and he's dead.
Yes, he's dead. Ivan Reitman was definitely doing stuff.
He actually doesn't have a whole lot of projects in the 2000s. I'm looking at this now. Evolution, which was the new Ghostbusters for the 21st century. And stuff like another high concept thing, My Super Ex-Girlfriend, which was just a We Hate Movies episode.
Yeah, isn't...
Oh, no, sorry. That was Ghost of Girlfriend's Past.
Okay, totally different.
Yeah.
I remember the Nathan Rabin review... For Super Ex-Girlfriend was basically, he's like, this is I Hate Women the movie. Like, it's a guy who's mad that his girlfriend gets superpowers, and then she, of course, after a breakup, becomes a crazy bitch, as all women do. And Uma Thurman's got to get paid, you know.
I was annoyed by that movie. I never saw it. I was annoyed by the title and how rock stupid and not clever it was. Like, premise of the movie. It's like Hotel for Dogs. It's like My Super Ex-Girlfriend. It's so clumsy, but it's just there to give you the premise. Like, what's this movie about? Oh, his girlfriend's a superhero. His ex-girlfriend's a superhero.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, she starts as a girlfriend for Luke Wilson, which also is like you get the lesser Wilson, too.
One of those discount Wilsons.
As for the Misfits, I know... some metaler heads love them. I never really follow them. I'll actually, after 1997, after this album came out, that's when I ever even heard of the Misfits because they were super into wrestling and they made appearances, the Misfits did, in WCW. So I kept seeing, like, the Misfits are here to sing a song and interfere in a match. I'm like, well, I guess they must be a popular band. I see those t-shirts all around.
I really only know the t-shirt. I'm sorry if the music is good.
And I know Glenn Danzig as a guest star on Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
That's right.
And Pope John Paul poping it up all over town.
Poping it up all over the world. He was all right. But let's get into this episode, Plastic White Female. It's been a while since we've had a new writer on board King of the Hill. So let's talk about this new guy. He might sound familiar to you if you're into adult cartoon sitcoms, but it's David Zuckerman. So let's go into where he got started. His first writing credit was for the short-lived anthology, Freddy's Nightmares.
Oh,
just one script. So
wow.
He wrote one episode of the two-season Freddy anthology series, which was, I guess, introed by Robert Englund as Freddy.
Yes, in costume, yeah. That's that show scared the shit out of me as a kid because I didn't understand that R-rated things couldn't happen on television. I mean, I kind of like them now because anthology, after Twilight Zone, there never got to be anthology shows anymore. Now they're kind of making a comeback with Black Mirror.
What about that about Twilight Zone, the newer one? Did that come back yet?
It did come back, but it's on CBS All Access.
Oh,
so
nobody's
watching that.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. That's where the Picard show is going to be, and it's just like at the upfronts for CBS, Stephen Colbert had a really funny thing where he's like, "Look at all of you here. You're all these millions of people. You're just like everybody else. You don't have CBS access."
Like, that's good. I did like that. So after Freddy's Nightmares, his next gig was on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, where he was there for about 3 years.
Okay.
He wrote 8 episodes, so that was his first real sitcom experience. But right after that, he created a short-lived TV series called The Last Frontier in 1996, which the internet does not care about at all.
Huh, wow.
I can't find a scrap of info outside of the IMDb page, and here is the premise based on that IMDb page. A wealthy, spoiled young woman from Los Angeles moves to Alaska, where circumstances dictate that she room with 3 men not quite in her social strata.
Oh,
so
boy.
I guess you could see how antics would ensue from that scenario.
It sounds like a lot of antics there.
He created that in 1986, and it aired for 6 episodes.
That's just how television was back then. They pulled the plug very fast back then.
With these shows, I'm like, what if it was secretly the Breaking Bad of its time that never took off or something? Who knows? But I can't find a trace of it. The Last Frontier is associated with Alaska, so you find a lot more things in the SEO results for that, so it's kind of lost.
We need to hit up David Zuckerman just for that. Like, dude, you must have tapes of it. Let's share it with the world. Put it on YouTube.
Well, when I tell you about his career, you'll understand why he'll never talk to us. So,
I think I know where this is going.
He's a mega billionaire, but let's go on with his career. Yeah. So, after creating that Last Frontier series, he's hired for King of the Hill. He works there for the first 3 seasons. I think he leaves in early season 3 to develop Family Guy.
Right.
He's the developer.
He's the Zuckerman on Family Guy. That's
he was
right.
The sitcom knowledgeable guy that helped Seth MacFarlane create the world of Family Guy. He has no writing credits for his time on Family Guy, but he is the first showrunner of Family Guy. Wow.
I mean, it kind of reminds me actually of King of the Hill veteran Jim Dotrieve. He was put in charge as co-showrunner on Bob's Burgers because they'd never worked with that person before. And like that person, I mean, Lauren Bouchard. And same with Seth MacFarlane. They're like, well, you've done a cartoon before, but this is network. We kind of need to know somebody's watching you closely.
And we will be talking about Jim Dotrieve in the next episode and
where
he came from. And he does not have a huge career, but it's very interesting. So Family Guy, guess what he develops next with Seth MacFarlane? American Dad.
Yes,
he develops that show with Seth MacFarlane. And there's some other credits here, including there's a few shows that he did that were just like 6 episodes or whatever. One of them was like shortly before American Dad called The Big House, and that was a Kevin Hart sitcom.
Oh.
So I didn't know Kevin Hart was ever in a sitcom. He's like huge though, right?
Yeah. I mean, Kevin Hart's one of those guys who they just tried to get going several times. Like Fox was definitely interested in him. Like he has kind of a major guest appearance on Undeclared.
Okay.
They were really, from that early, they were like, oh, Kevin Hart's the next best big thing. It's like how before Friends happens, you see so many of the Friends appearing in things because the push was there for them to be stars.
Especially Matt LeBlanc, for sure.
Can't escape that guy.
So up next, after all of this stuff, he most recently developed the American adaptation of Wilfred, which he did write for, which is the Elijah Wood talking to a guy in like what, a teddy bear costume or a
dog suit.
Yeah, I don't know what it's about. I just know that's an iconic image from the show.
Everybody treats Wilfred like a dog, except for Elijah Wood, who can tell he's a man in a dog costume. And I mean, when you see like this is clearly a passion project for Elijah Wood, because he's like, he just came off Lord of the Rings. Well, not just, but he just finished Lord of the Rings. And here he takes this like weird ass FX sitcom. Clearly, he wanted artistic choices driving him versus money ones.
And there are no credits for Zuckerman after that, but that was very recently in history in the teens, I guess.
Yeah,
you call
I mean,
them.
Once that's over, he's not getting any younger. Plus, like the richer you get, how much more do you want to make television?
He's got to have like $11 billion. So yeah, he was with Family Guy from the very beginning, and with American Dad, both shows are still running. He's got to be making royalties.
Oh yeah,
left
like
and right.
I mean, Sam Simon was making money off The Simpsons 15 years after he left that until his death. So Zuckerman's probably in a similar situation, though. I'm sure he makes a ton of money off Family Guy, but it can't be anything compared to Sam Simon's Simpsons money.
Oh no.
Not that I wouldn't turn down his paycheck that I'm sure Zuckerman is collecting
and
on.
He's
those
so ones. Rich, who needs to be creative anymore? I say retire.
I would. David. Oh my gosh. I wouldn't even done Wilfred. I would have just been like, especially with American Dad, what do you do as co-creator on that? Like, what if it was a patriot who was Peter Griffin?
I mean, I love American Dad more than Family Guy, actually.
I fucking love American Dad.
It's great.
Dad, yeah.
But they said, like, we couldn't make Family Guy, so we made, like, the Family Guy facsimile. Like, yeah. All the characters function in sort of the same way.
If you listen to our What a Cartoon About American Dad, you'll hear that when we truly got into American Dad was when they knew Family Guy was back, so they just got weirder and weirder. I always was confused by Zuckerman's name on there because when I first saw Family Guy and saw his name early in the credits, I thought he was related to the airplane people.
Me too.
I always thought that.
And they're just Zucker, right?
Yeah, they're Zucker. I was just making connections that didn't exist. But now I'm glad he's not because those guys are right-wing jerks.
This
so
is
fuck
a Zucker
them.
Man.
Yeah. Be a Zucker man, not a Zucker.
Is it really? Is it both of the Zuckers for American Carol? That timeless movie.
No, you are correct. It's just David Zucker.
David, the cursed Zucker,
starring Kevin Farley, the other
that's
one.
That's good enough.
Yeah, look,
it's everyone's less talented brother.
Kevin Farley's fine.
Bad for Kevin Farley having to live in the shadow of Chris Farley.
Yeah.
I don't feel bad for John Belushi. Jim Belushi.
Yeah, he looks a lot like him. I remember he was on that MTV show that was like fake Backstreet Boys.
Yeah.
He was funny in that.
He was funny on that. Yeah. Like, could this be the new Chris Farley? It turns out it wasn't, but he had a moment in the sun, I guess.
Yeah, but that's we are getting so far away from David
Zuckerman. Yeah, it's true. But that's it, and we can get into our episode, Plastic White Female. It is the season finale calendar wise for season one. We will be doing The Company Man, which is production episode 12. This is production episode 11, which is not it's so complicated.
So then what was 13?
13 was King of the Anthill.
Wow.
So
man.
That was the last production episode of season one.
When I think of them choosing this as the broadcast season finale, that's just such a weird thing that like the last scene of this episode is kind of a weird one, and that's what they leave you with for the summer. They're
Bobby
like,
lunging at Nancy.
Yes, yeah. But this is a fun episode that when I saw it at 14, 13, it really captured the awkwardness I was feeling as a growing boy with feelings, and especially like the mom and dad stuff really gets me in this one too. Again, as it usually does, Henry always says that on
Henry
the show.
Henry has a dad. Way to rub it in.
But this my mom has rarely been more Peggy-like than Peggy is in this episode, I think. At least with regards to fears of her children growing up. Definitely that.
Now, I was wondering about that we would have different takes on this because you're gay man, Henry.
Yeah.
And I'm clearly not.
Yes, yeah.
But
you're so heterosexual.
I feel like a lot of this is hetero, the Bobby stuff. Would you agree?
Well, yes, but the pain Bobby feels about... There's especially a scene in here that's like, what if you're not into girls? How does that make you
feel?
Okay,
yeah.
There's definitely stuff that was in that spoke to me then. And also like when I saw this, I wasn't totally sure what I was.
Yeah.
So when there's scenes in here where Bobby is afraid of what to do with girls, like I did have that kind of feeling of like, I guess I'm supposed to like girls. Like I hadn't gone down the tunnels of pornography I would just yet at this time.
So it was porno that did it.
Well, this episode, I love that they find such a clever idea to really just deal with. I mean, his time with the doll is masturbating.
Yeah.
Like that's what this is really about.
It really is. I mean, they clean this up a lot where if this was real life Bobby, there'd just be constant masturbating, which they can't show on TV. This is not Big Mouth.
No.
We're not in the Big Mouth era of television right now.
Yeah. So that's such a clever way to, I mean, in Beavis and Butthead, they're whacking it all the time.
Yeah, that's true.
But this is, they have to go to a weirder place. And so definitely, as well, I'm sure we could both, straight and gay, identify with the fear of, did I lock the door? Or, boy, my family left for the day.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
House to myself. Do-do-do.
Well, now I live alone.
you never have to worry about mom knocking on the door. So, yes, I think for all boys coming of age, and I think girls, too, I think this episode has identifiable moments. Mm-hmm.
So the cold open, I did not get a clip of this, Henry, for your sake, because it's full of realistic mouthful of spit acting. But it's
barf.
It's Joseph and Bobby doing some of their patented spitting off the pedestrian bridge. This is when Bobby finds out that Joseph is having a party, mm-hmm. and this party is not a birthday party. It's a boy-girl party.
I like the phrasing that he says, I'm going to have a party. Oh, can I come? I guess. Like, he's your best friend.
Maybe question their relationship there with, yeah. with that line of dialogue.
We've said it before, but season one, Bobby and Joseph are Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah, like, I'm sure, like, in Beavis and Butthead, they were spinning. Yeah, they're spinning at the mall. Like, yeah. spinning off the top of a thing at a mall or whatever.
Though Bobby and Joseph are a little geekier than Beavis and Butthead, making this into a Star Trek reference, too.
They are little stewards. Bobby yeah. is more like Stewart, I guess.
He 100% yeah. is. Yeah, he's... And he... I mean, he probably tried to befriend Beavis and Butthead types in the show. Oh, poor Stewart. Stewart makes me sad, too. It's a good gag, but also just him gulping in fear disgusts me so much. I don't even want to talk about it anymore. Okay.
We can move on from that.
Yes.
But after the opening song, of course, we have the sort of finale of Luann's story for the first season. They're getting into the last thing she has to do, which is the final.
Mm-hmm. And here we have the, you know, it's not at all a Harvard guy cast, but they are turning this into The Paper Chase, which is the Harvard Law School movie. Like, that the teacher is totally like the look to your left, look to your right, like the yeah. tough teacher.
They're doing a lot with beauty school that's not realistic, but it's yeah. like, what other things could be applied to beauty school that would be yeah. funny?
I love their imagined beauty school classroom, though. I could be wrong, maybe there is a classroom in beauty school. I just always assumed it was all in a, you know, with wigs and sitting at chairs and stuff. Mm. I figured that's all what beauty school was. Also, I mean, I could be wrong. But beauty school has more than 1 year. Like, this is like the first year of beauty school.
I knew somebody in college that I would get to cut my hair for cheap because she was going through beauty school. Okay, and it seemed like okay. a short program that was like held out of a salon. It's not like right. I'm majoring in beauty at yeah. Beauty university.
But I guess in Harlan, it's more of a specialty, I suppose.
Yeah, I think it's just getting your haircut license or whatever, basically.
Luann is so cute here that she like, she feels so awkward with the teacher. I like when she stands up and then when she gets a question wrong, she doesn't know how to sit back down.
She really is singled out by this teacher.
Yeah. Well, and then I also like the design on the good student in class who knows like all of the, it becomes a law referencing gag of just like, oh, it was at this time when this happened. Oh, everyone yeah. remembers that.
Citing precedent or whatever. Yeah. yeah.
That's what
it's nice
of.
That this girl, who I don't believe is named, I think we hear her last name, but she is not like a rival for Luann. She's actually supportive of Luann.
She has a few like sad looks at Luann that let you know she's not trying to destroy her. Like Luann, she definitely has some rivals in her life. This is not one of them, though.
So back at the Hill House, let's hear about Luann's hair woes.
A manicurist with a 7-inch file is on a train heading east at 80 miles per hour.
Not another manicure question. Why do I need to learn all this stuff? Beauty is an art. It's not something you can learn in school like gym or study hall.
Bills, bills, bills. Why do we keep getting bills mail?
Uncle Hank, want me to give you a whole new look?
Why would I want to do that? You don't mess with success.
But I need as much practice as I can get before my final. Please.
Well, it has been almost a week since my last haircut. Now what the heck, I could use a trim.
Great! I'll be right with you.
I really enjoyed the bills, bills, bills. It's the one time they can use that joke.
It's so funny.
And it's perfect. It's
so goddamn it. It's so funny, especially that Hank would never hate getting bills, I guess. He probably takes pride in always being on top of his bills, so he'd never fear them. But yeah, his just reaction, God, bills, 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 so funny. And Luann listing her favorite classes, that's what
study
I love.
Study hall and gym.
Yeah, she can't name an actual class. And then too, that it's so silly that the beautician test is really an algebra word problem. That's so funny.
Yeah, I mean, again, they're applying different kinds of schooling to beauty academies. It's like, what do we know about school? Oh, yeah, there are like time distance problems.
And Hank is such an anal guy that he would have a haircut that much. As listeners know, I hate haircuts. I try to spend 6 to 9 months between haircuts. Bob is a little better at haircut speed than me, but I just like having luxurious locks. I'll be sad when this hair starts to thin out too much more. But Hank, you know, his haircut is precise. Like it borders on a military haircut.
You can set a watch to it, I think.
So the joke with Connie's hair, Yeah. I don't. Okay, so did she treat her hair so much that it just pulled out the parts that were being highlighted when she took it out?
Oh, you know what? I think that is the joke.
I think that's the joke.
For a second, I thought she was just using Connie as sort of like a stand-in mannequin, where it's like, I have this hair cap that has highlights on it that I can, like, you know, practice with.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. I think she, like, dissolved the hair.
I think that's it. She treated it too many times that she'd rip it out. Though also, with later in this, I'm surprised she was even allowed to get highlights, theoretically, because with how controlling her parents were, you would think they'd be pretty upset. Like, if I dyed my hair, my parents would give me a look, that's for sure. And I did not have half as controlling parents as the Super Nusenphone family.
Maybe she was trying to be rebellious in a small way by getting, like, nice highlights.
But it's a great... I do love Luann's delivery. I'm like, it's done. You love them. That's great.
I'm glad. Okay, yeah. It's like, again, they're figuring out the animation, what they can do and what they can't do. And that's like something that I was like, well, what is that?
Yeah, this whole season we've talked about it so many times. Like, they get more ambitious than I think they realize they could pull off. Like that, which on a TV show budget, it's not saying that their animators are bad. They're actually quite good. But like, that those misshapen forks, the boggle, the fire ants, like,
yeah,
they asked a lot, and I think it was them testing the limits. In season two, I think they'd have a much better idea of what they could go for.
So Hank goes to the kitchen and sees Peggy has been given a horrifying new makeover.
It's like a pineapple.
It's like a troll doll. I like how when she moves her head, you can hear the hair rustling. So it's clearly like kept up there with some sort of like foundation or something.
That's great. Troll doll. Yeah. Well, and then Hank also talking about his haircut is how he sells propane. It's like it makes him look professional.
It's a little eye candy for the customers.
I always, you know, I love this gag about Reagan.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, so Hank doesn't want to get a haircut, and Luann's like, well, maybe I could just die. He's like, men don't do that.
Men don't do that. And she then tells him, like, yeah, President Reagan did. Like, I'm not saying he did, but if he did, it was only to show strength to the communists. Like, that's so great, because Luann actually very smartly had an undercut to Hank's views on masculinity of, like, well, one of your favorite presidents dyed his hair, and he's like, well, if he had to, then it was for America.
That seems to be like a very well-known fact about him, but if you go back to pictures, like, his hair is like, he's in his 70s, his hair is shoe polished black. It's like, how did anyone like never question that?
Kent Brockman knew.
Yeah,
Kent Brockman
dyes his hair.
Well, I think too with his hair, Tom Sharpling, he has this great joke about how he's in, like, he would sometimes get in Twitter fights with Chuck Woolery, who's like a conservative douche, and he talks about how Ronald Reagan convinced him that old guys like him can dye their hair black and they don't look like gorillas with wigs on.
He's got some real Gumby hair. I'm looking at pictures of him now.
Yes, yeah. I mean, it feels more like a rug than just dyed hair, which that's dangerous. I mean, at that age, dyeing your hair, you're probably just asking to lose it anyway.
So we're in the alley, and Dale is telling Hank about the boy-girl party with girls. And Dale vows there won't be any hanky-panky on his watch. And as that's happening, Nancy is leaving with John Redcorn.
I like she puts groceries in the car with her. Like,
it's like it feels like it's going to be an extended stay.
Oh, yeah.
Wherever she's going with John Redcorn.
Well, it's great. Just great animation that she leaves the door open on the car because she's like, I'm not going to be long. Don't worry. And how uncomfortable everybody else is with it.
Hank changes the subject by saying, and when he was a kid, he was so girl crazy, they called him Ricardo Montalban after the actor.
It's classic Hank Bobby relationship that Hank is so blind to how just like unmasculine Bobby is, or also just like pre-sexual he is. He has no romantic interest in anything, but Hank tells himself that the normal thing is to be interested in girls now, and if you're not, you are not normal, and that needs to be fixed right now. But right now, he's just telling himself, Bobby's definitely normal, so he probably will definitely want to be around all these girls.
There's not a lot of fear of Bobby being gay, as we saw in Homer's Phobia, of Homer thinking Bart would be gay. There's a tiny bit of it that I do enjoy, where later in the episode, he's like, I don't even like girls. And Hank just like, there's like a reaction shot of Hank just like blankly staring.
That's a great, we'll get to that one, but that's a great moment. But yeah, otherwise, it's just, I think he's just mad that Bobby is being a baby when he should be growing up at his age.
So in the kitchen, they're discussing the party.
Hey there, Bobby. I guess they found a cure for the cooties.
I don't know. What are cooties?
Well, when I was a boy, that's what we called the germs you got from girls.
Oh, you mean like chlamydia?
Huh?
What on earth are you two talking about?
Bobby was invited to his first boy-girl party.
A boy-girl party? Already?
Well, I don't think I want to go.
Well, that's just fine, Bobby. Would you like a juice box?
Wait a minute. Son, why would you not want to go to a boy-girl party?
Parties are fun, Bobby. Everybody dresses up and gets a touch dance.
Touch dance? I don't know. What if I get filled up?
Oh, you just need some practice.
Peggy glares at her.
Luann's right. All you need is practice. You think Jeff Foxworthy just woke up one day and took some funny pills?
He would be a big fan.
He's trying to meet Bobby in the middle by reference to comedy, I think.
I do like that. Yeah, it's what Hank knows about comedy.
This whole bit is so great. Like, Bobby's knowledge of STDs undercuts Hank's more innocent jibes about cooties. And then the way they play Peggy in all these scenes, you can see she's quietly disturbed, and there's a lot she's not saying, like, so soon? No, of course. And then the second Bobby doesn't seem interested, she's like, of course you're not interested. Here, have a juice box. You're a baby. Like, don't grow up.
Yeah, we see, like, juice boxes on Sundays.
She's so terrified of her kid growing up, which, like, he's the only kid. I mean, this was the part that really got me. I mean, my mom didn't like the idea of me growing up. Like, the idea of being, like, even seven. The first time I drove a car by myself, she was super worried. She made me bring, we only had one cell phone. This was like 99. I didn't start driving until I was 18, I think. So this was actually, 2000. I drive alone for the first time. She tells me to bring the cell phone with me, and I have to call her when I get halfway there to the like Blockbuster Video. I'm like, see, Mom, I'm fine. Everything's fine. She's like, okay.
Is this really Henry?
Yeah. She was terrified. Like, she.
I do think your parents, not your parents, but people's parents in general, tend to underestimate them because some of their memories are locked in place from when you were still developing. Mm-hmm. It's like, but to this day, my parents still think I'm really clumsy, but it's like, no, I was just living with you when I was going through puberty and like getting used to my new adult body. So it's like, I have the reputation of being clumsy around my parents. I was like, I'm not clumsy.
Yeah, I think I used to have that too with my mom where she thinks I don't cook. She's like, oh, I figured when she came by to do things, so we couldn't do Thanksgiving at her place because of shitty relatives who don't want to meet a husband. Anyway.
Everybody likes husbands.
Yes.
Except for the husbands of husbands.
But anyway, but this wasn't my mom. My mom and direct family, they're fine with it. But anyway, so they come here to do Thanksgiving stuff like a week later, which was nice. But then when they wanted to do it, my mom was like, so do you have a pan? I was like, I cook things.
I have a spoon, Henry.
So then my husband afterwards, we sent them multiple like friendly joking videos of like, here's Henry cooking again. See, he's making meatloaf. Here he is again making food. Like, but she just, when I was 22 living at home, I didn't make food. Like, I microwaved a frozen thing because I was fucking lazy and didn't know how to cook things, you know? I think it takes a while for some parents to realize that I'm not a parent, but I did see this. I remember this commercial that really reminded me of what it probably feels like for some parents, where it was like this little girl says she's going to go drive away, and then the dad blinks and she's an adult now. She's like, I'm going to college, Dad.
Oh,
like,
no, the time stream.
But it is like how a parent can never not see you as a child.
Yeah.
So it's the idea for them of like, this child is driving away and going to college or something. It can scare them, especially. And Peggy is a very overprotective mom who Hank is kind of right later in this episode that her overprotectiveness is kind of stunting Bobby's growth. Like, she all but tells him, you don't need to grow up. No, no, no. Like, don't socialize more.
The message is sort of in the middle where it's just like, well, both Peggy and Hank are wrong with their parenting styles, but I still like it. There are still good stories that can come out of that sort of message where it's just like, both things are wrong.
Yeah. One, Hank's forcefulness too of like, well, no, it's not okay. You have to go. And I think Luann maybe has the best one where she's just like, no, intimacy can be fun. It's just nice. Like, Hank can't say that romantic feelings are that good because he's too frigid. But Luann can say that. And I like how much she just likes the idea of touch dancing. She's like, oh, that's so nice. And the way Peggy just glares at her. But But this goes back to that Square Peg episode. Luann is sexually free and doesn't know shame, and Peggy is full of shame.
Hank does want Bobby to have normal human impulses, mm-hmm. like horniness.
For girls.
For girls. But he can't say that.
Yes, yeah. Well, because, I mean, it is, I would assume it's a difficult line to walk with your child, because you don't want them to feel like sex is wrong, because you want them to grow up to be a healthy person. But it's also like, I don't want to talk about sex with my child. Like, you're too young. Like, it just feels weird, you know?
That reminds me of, man, this is so disgusting. But, oh, no. It's not that gross, but when people buy, like, babies t-shirts to say, like, I'm a lady killer.
Oh,
or,
yeah,
like,
barf.
Don't put sexuality on your babies.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Let them figure it out.
That baby...
Let them develop speech first, and then they can figure it out.
That baby might not even know its gender yet, so fuck off with that shit. We are to the left on gender roles here.
I feel the same way about putting your baby in like a fucking Star Wars t-shirt. Yeah. Let your baby decide if it likes Star Wars.
I love that the kids that our generation who didn't like being forced to play baseball are now making their kids have to like Star Wars.
The nerds won, and it's terrible. Yeah. So we get a brief joke-free scene at the Beauty Academy. This is when the heads are introduced, and once again Luann is sort of singled out by the teacher as a potential failure.
Miss Platter. Yeah, we get a nice foreshadowing of the head's importance. Also, it's very random, but I like the Mr. Hernandez who
oh, yeah.
It's a story to this guy.
He passes out the heads, is that
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's got long blonde hair. He's a very fancy looking man called Mr. Hernandez. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a story there. I like that kind of character.
So we're at Tom Landry Middle School, and we get one of the several kinds of scenes we've gotten earlier in the season that will continue for a little bit after this episode, where I feel like they were a bit insecure, like, okay, this show is about very like middle of the road people. It's a very low energy show about, you know, not aspiring to much and in a very flat world.
Pedestrian.
They live in. Yeah. But I think they were feeling insecure about that. So every three episodes we get like a wild fantasy sequence. And I think the last one that they do is in the episode Hillennium, which was the first one in a while.
I love that one.
But it was when they're all like they have to make it so they're all like tripping on paint fumes, and yeah. Hank has a weird daydream about like them being the moles
whack-a-moles.
In the whack-a-mole game.
Yeah,
yeah, but it was like, it was so weird to see one of those after so long, and then they never did it again.
Yeah, maybe it was also executive pressure, who just feels like, why? Maybe they're hearing from above, like, why isn't this filmed? Why isn't this just live action? So they can show off with fantasy sequences like this. Like, I do like Bobby has never looked softer or shorter in the show.
Yeah.
That's core to his design that he is a late bloomer. Like, he should be getting taller, he should be losing some of his baby fat, but he's a little kid surrounded by growing girls. And though this fantasy of him being so much smaller than them starts to verge into fetish territory, I will say.
I think Bobby's exploring some of his preferences with
this
fantasy.
I think so.
I mean, I never experienced this girls being much taller than me, because I am slightly tall, and I think I had a growth spurt early, so I never experienced like towering women.
You know, me neither. I think I was always taller than the girls in my, well, or as tall. Like, we're both slightly over 6 feet, so we're lucky in that regard. We're more, I'm so much like Joseph. No. I was Bobby, just not in the height department.
But did you have a Mrs. Doubtfire lunchbox,
no,
which I liked?
That's so, by middle school, I was too shamed into having a lunchbox. I applaud Bobby for still having the guts to have a lunchbox, because I think if I ever brought a lunchbox to middle school, I don't think I even did, but probably the first day I brought it, I would have been made fun of by every person.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think actually by sixth grade, I was getting made fun of it. So I was like, brown bag it is.
I think fourth or fifth grade was my last lunchbox year.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Actually, yeah. Fifth grade and sixth grade were brown bags. By middle school, I actually stopped even asking for lunch, because I was like, you know what? I get home at 2. I'm just going to eat at 2, and I'll have nobody judge
me
for my
lunch. Get home at 2?
Yeah. Well,
what kind of crazy school day
started
was this?
At 7 a.m.
Okay, I was gonna say that sounds crazy.
Yeah,
get home at 2. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it was not. You get to watch all of Disney Afternoon then. That part was good, but you don't want to wake up as early as I had to. It's not fair.
It sounds bad.
But that Mrs. Doubtfire, I mean, you know, when you see it there too, you can imagine Hank like frowning at it. Like, here's this. It tells you, like, why does he love this drag movie?
I was gonna say,
so
it's a
much?
Comedy about a man in drag.
Yes.
We'll be talking a lot about more Robin Williams coming up again in this podcast. Okay, interesting. So yeah, Bobby has this dark fantasy about giant women crushing him between their toes. I made that part up.
With their scary spitting breasts.
Yeah,
too.
And like tribal face paint makeup.
When you're starting to feel those feelings, like the people you're attracted to can seem very scary to you. Like that felt very realistic, though. I think, you know, I'm glad they have Connie there as a regular girl, because they make those other girls seem so much more confident when really they're as tortured as he is. They're also unhappy. But how little he feels when he's reaching up to his locker is just, it's very sad.
Yeah, their use of Connie in this episode is really good, because this is an episode about puberty and Bobby not going through puberty. One of my favorite episodes is the episode where Connie gets her period for the first time while she's staying at the Hills.
Oh,
and Hank is the one who has to deal with it. It is so funny, his discomfort.
Oh, that's so... I forgot about that one, God. Yeah, that he... I can't think of one thing he'd be less prepared for than menstruation. That's so funny. Well, then, well, talk about ambitious footage there, too. Talk about ambitious animation. They have kind of like a tracking walk and talk shot of like the lockers moving behind Bobby and Connie as they talk. As Connie says, she is not allowed to do anything with boys until she's married.
And Bobby says he's not going to Joseph's party because his birthday's in 9 weeks and he doesn't want to get partied out. But it's later in the kitchen he decides he is not going to Joseph's party.
Bobby, which bolo tie do you want to wear to the party? The cow skull or the bull skull?
It doesn't matter. I'm not going.
What?
It's just a dumb party.
A dumb party with girls?
Well, I don't like girls.
Peg, honey, close the screen door.
Hank, can I speak with you?
In a minute.
In the kitchen?
This better be about dinner.
Well, Hank Hill, why don't you just drive him out to Hollywood and put him on the dating game?
He's almost a teenager. It ain't normal not to be curious.
Oh, it is perfectly normal for a late bloomer to be a little...
Hey, he is not a late bloomer. How can you even think something like that about your own son?
Well, he obviously is not ready to socialize with the opposite sex, Hank.
The way you baby him, he never will be.
Do you know anyone who would like a hot fudge sundae?
Perfect reading on that line.
Bobby's weight comes more obvious here. I mean, this really got me in just knowing that parents are arguing about you, like that hurts. And then just being given like sweets as a way to apologize. Like, oh, sorry, we were arguing about you and you know it.
I like how they played the first part of the argument sort of off screen. It was a little muffled, but Bobby was outside hearing them argue. It was very realistic. Like, you've been there if you were a kid, your parents are arguing about you and you're outside of the room. You're like, I can hear all of this.
And there's such great like little acting there. Like when he says he's not going, they do a quick cut to Peggy smiling like, oh,
yeah, that's right.
He's not doing it. And he'd be too unlikable if he said, my son's not gay, or you're not going to be a homo or whatever. But just his reaction to hearing that Bobby doesn't like girls is just like, close the screen door. Yeah. Like he's about to really tell Bobby what's up. So I'm glad we go away from that there.
I don't want to think that of Hank Hill.
No, I mean, I don't think he's non-homophobic. Like, I mean, he's uncomfortable around gays in that he's uncomfortable around anything. But no, I don't think Hank himself is personally homophobic. But that's also what this kind of, when they think that he's in love with a doll later, it also kind of becomes a thing of like clumsily trying to be understanding of a gay son as well. Like that's another bit that really got me.
So Luann arrives home with her practice head, and that's where we get this clip.
Well, Luann, it's a very nice head.
Don't touch it!
Such a great scream.
God,
when I recorded this episode back in 1997 for the first time, I think I rewound that a million times. Like, did a human make that noise?
Brittany Murphy, the greatest.
Yeah.
Like, R.I.P. She's, God, too good. Too fucking good. Sad.
We lost her way too young.
But that scream is so great.
Yes. And she's amazing. But Bobby falls in love with the head immediately. Mm. There's a great little montage where Bobby is watching Luann comb the head's hair in the window. And then Luann puts a sheet over the head and starts taking her top off, and Bobby sadly turns away. That's such a funny joke.
So,
I love it
so much. I mean,
it makes you think of how, like, oh, Bobby's so sweet.
Yes, yeah. I mean, it's actually his total disinterest in Luann's undressing actually makes him more healthy than somebody who would say, watch their cousin undress secretly. Like,
they're attractive cousins.
Yes, that's a creepy thing to do. But, I mean, that scene there, too, is like totally... That's a scene from Porky's. That's a scene from Animal House. Yeah, I mean, exactly a scene from Animal House.
And it's kind of creepy how Bobby's outside the window in the dark.
Yes, yeah. Well, so there's several scenes in here, including that one, that really remind me of, like, you know, 50s trash films like you'd see on MST3K. Mm. Specifically, it feels a little like Glenn or Glenda, especially like how he has kind of... Bobby has a button-up.
Like
and
a
then
cardigan a, or yeah, something.
Cardigan
yeah,
cardigan over it. That really reminded me of... 50s like Reefer Madness too, just but yeah, I also like that Luann is just so naive in her sexuality. She doesn't even think of like, yeah, the window's open, I'm taking my top off, just normal things. Like, she doesn't even think of that.
They had fun drawing as much cleavage as possible until they cut away.
Yeah, I mean, the animators are having fun with Luann a lot of the time. I mean,
Luann is the only attractive woman, conventionally attractive woman on the show, so they have a lot of fun drawing her.
This will be revisited in a later episode where Bobby is very uncomfortable that he saw Luann naked.
That's a great one, too.
More
but
than
Joseph
once, yeah.
Is way into it.
And Bobby doesn't understand why. He's because it's his cousin. That's also a great, like... That scene made me laugh so hard because I completely forgot it until that scene happened.
And the next scene, Bobby is feigning playing his Game Boy. You see the screen says game over. He's just sort of staring at the head in the kitchen while he's pressing the buttons.
That's great.
And Luann is putting the head's hair in curlers. Piggy's going to leave with Bobby because there's a sale on jockey shorts. And Bobby says he's improvising an excuse. He has to stay home to watch an after-school special. It's about Jesus.
His little smile when he says it's about Jesus. That's great. This is, you said that on the Joneses episode. We're finally getting to realer Bobby. Like, that moment is very Bobby. Not just the, okay.
Yeah. Which we saw earlier today. earlier in this episode. Sorry.
And it's a very... Definitely, we all remember the joy of like, oh, you know, Mom, I'm not going to go. Like, it's okay. I'll just stay here. That's we all and knew that.
Peggy takes a lot of wisdom from television. So she's like, well, you cannot miss that.
Yes. Yeah. An after school special about Jesus. Got to watch that. I also, when they introduce the head fascination, it feels like Hank's got a devil's bargain. He's like, I want my boy to like women. It's like, all right, he likes women, specifically
the
this
severed
head
of a fake woman.
Yes.
So Bobby, it really is a masturbation allegory because Bobby like draws the blinds, puts a chair in front of the door. I like how just dark the house is and all these scenes with the head in them.
And, you know, I think the way they keep building and building to it, you think that he's going to, in some way, use the head to jerk off with. But instead, it just turns incredibly innocent of talking to a woman.
And going on very, like, 50s-style dates, like having grape soda and, like, salsa dancing and stuff like that.
I love it. He's like, oh, do you want to dance? Bum, 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 bum. Like, it's not a slow dance, which, so clearly you can't even really figure out the romantic angle to it either just yet.
As expected, Peggy does come home, and Bobby starts drinking both cans of soda. And I do like his, nothing!
Nothing.
And the very well-animated, like, little look of, like, huh, that Peggy gives him.
Yeah. I think our parents probably had to just go like, I know what's going on. Yeah. I just can't. Whatever.
I mean,
whatever.
If I had a kid, I'd be like, well, I mean, there's a scene in Rick and Morty, I think the first season, where you don't see Morty masturbating, but his dad comes in or his mom comes in. He's like, listen, I'm a 14-year-old boy. You can't just walk in my room whenever you want.
You really rolled the dice here. Yeah. Like, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then in that same season when he got that sex robot, they were all just like, are we just going to pretend this isn't happening? And they're like... Yes, we are. We are.
And we all know that based on a previous episode, Hank masturbated a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Always in that bathroom.
Which seemingly Peggy didn't understand. So, I mean, it could be that Peggy is so innocent she would not even imagine masturbation is a thing. And also, a little animation mistake. For a few frames, that soda can turns into an Alamo can.
I noticed that. Actually, I was going to write this down, but thanks for reminding me. It still says grape on it, but has the coloring of an Alamo can.
Okay.
So it says GRAP, but it's like the red and gold Alamo coloring for one scene.
But that, I mean, when you have overseas animation, especially in the first season, people are just getting used to it. So, but it turns into a funnier moment of Bobby, for a frame, it looks like Bobby's drinking beer very casually in front of his parents.
That is funny. So up next, we have a scene in the alley talking about hair problems and some new recruits.
Hey, Dale. Bill Boomhauer.
Don't you Dale, Bill Boomhauer us. You said noon. It's 12:15.
Do you have any idea how long we've been waiting?
I overslept. My damned hair is getting so long, it's rustling on my pillow and keeping me up all night.
Uncle Hank, I never seen you with such long hair. Come on, let me trim it.
Nope, sorry, I love my long, long hair. Why don't you practice on your practice head?
But I only get one chance to cut that hair.
Hey, we got a whole busload of new recruits coming on base today. You could practice on them.
Thanks, Mr. Dugtrieve. I'll go get my instruments.
Boy, I can't wait for her to get that damn test over with.
Yeah, I know. You know, I feel for that kid. I remember when I was starting out as a young barber, I felt so alone.
Nobody cares, Bill.
Okay, that's my line of the show. Okay. It's so not clever, but let's give it the line of the show.
I laugh at Tony Danza.
I
laugh at Tony
Danza. I just like how Dale ends the scene. Nobody cares, Bill.
And it just stops. Everyone accepts that they don't care. Like, nobody corrects Dale to say, no, I care. I want to hear.
Bill wants to sweetly share his feelings of empathy for Luann. Yeah. He's like, nobody cares, Bill.
And this is the first time we knew that he worked on the Army base, but yeah, this is the introduction of his actual job there.
And it's another great touch. Again, the show's choices are all about specificity, and making him an Army barber is something that no other show has done. No other fictional thing has done. I've never seen it before. It's like, oh, that's a very clever choice. And they get a lot of stories out of it, too.
Yeah, and it puts Bill in a really funny place, because you have the masculinity of the Army, but you have, like, the no one respects an Army barber. Like, if you respect the troops, you don't really respect, like, and also it's just such a monotonous job of, like, he doesn't have to, you shave heads. Like, that's all you do. You're not doing actual artistic barber. Honestly, who couldn't be an Army barber if all you have to do is just shave heads?
It should take like a day's worth of training to not like nick the scalp.
Well, actually, he does cut the hairs of like generals and stuff, which are not just full-on shaves. So there is that. But the character, well, I did Google this. According to my Googling, most military barbers are actually contractors hired to the base these days.
Interesting.
They are not enlisted men.
So Bill would have to be retired by now. No, it is funny that two of the characters on this show are hairdressers.
Yeah, it's odd. I wonder if they planned that from the beginning, or if they just it just came naturally. Like, would it be funny? What would a funny job for Bill be?
Yes. Yeah. It feels like it fits in with like, oh, it'd be funny if Luann was cutting the recruit's hair and like really girly hairstyles. It's like, oh yeah, what if Bill was a military barber? That would be hilarious.
That'd get us there. Also, in animation mistakes, right after Bill says, do you know how long it's been? They cut to Dale, and Dale has gray hair.
It's like Dale aged suddenly.
And I love the cleverness of, we were supposed to meet at noon. It's 12:15. Yeah. You know how long we've been waiting. Yeah. That's great.
I mean, Hank is clearly stressed out. I mean, 15 minutes late for Hank is a nightmare for him, I think.
I like that a quarter inch of hair is his longest it's ever been, and that it's driving him crazy, but his hair design has not changed. Like, character-wise, he looks exactly the same.
There's a great future episode that's all about Bill's job, and Hank's old barber goes insane. He, is an insane old man, so he has to get a new barber, and he goes to Bill. And he ends up getting billed the Army price for a haircut, which is like $10,000.
That's right.
Hank points out the corruption in the military or the overspending, and Bill loses his job.
Oh, man. Yeah.
It's a great, great story.
That's right. That had one of my favorite gay jokes ever in the show, where the general needs his hair cut again. And he says, like, okay, does anybody here know how to cut hair? Or anybody here know hairdressing?
Yeah.
And a gay guy says to the other one, like, it's a trick. Don't do it. Like, he's trying to catch us.
And at the end, I think it's like, it's a ruse that Bill still works there. It's like, your job is to fix these pinball machines if they break. But he's really just there to cut hair.
And while you're here waiting to fix those pinball machines, cut my hair.
We'll get to that in a few years more of Talking of the Hill.
Yes, yeah.
So, yes, we get that scene of Luann cutting the recruits' hairs. They're much happier when their heads are shaved by Bill right afterwards.
That's an extra humiliation for guys who are going to have their head shaved, that first they have to be given a woman's haircut and then have their hair shaved. And it's a very subtle joke, but the guy smiles when he gets his head shaved, which normally in the Army you don't smile when you get
for
your,
any reason.
Yes.
So finally, because of his newfound head confidence, Bobby is ready to party.
Wow, you look good.
You look better than good. You look like a weatherman.
I'm just gonna have some fruit and a glass of skim milk. I want to slim down for Joseph's party.
Attaboy.
But, Bobby, you said you didn't want to go.
I changed my mind.
He changed his mind.
Bet I know why. Bobby Hill has a girlfriend.
He does not. Do you?
No.
There's nothing to be embarrassed about, son. Hell, I'm proud of you.
Hell, I'm proud of you too, Dad.
See, Peggy? Our boy is perfectly normal.
I did love that, Bobby. Hell, I'm proud of you too, Dad.
It walks away.
I think, Pamela, the actor for Bobby, is figuring out, like, oh, it's a lot more fun to play Bobby more than just, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Him with more energy is so funny. And, God, Peggy is so disturbed by, like, do you? Like, I thought you said we weren't going to go to that party. She's so defensive. And, yeah, Hank celebrating too early here. It's also a great smash cut of, like, our boy is perfectly normal.
And then the head montage happens, yeah. Set to Wouldn't It Be Nice.
A Beach Boys classic. I mean, thumbs up to them for paying for surely not a cheap song.
Seems expensive to me.
Yeah. The montage is cute. My favorite is when they're pointing at the clouds together. Though, from the under chin angle of Bobby, I think he looks kind of like Ross Perot.
Oh, really? I'll have to go back to that shot. I didn't really understand what the joke was for that cloud watching scene, other than he was just doing it with a head.
I guess it was that. I mean, the clouds look so... The clouds look like drawings, so maybe it's... The joke was they look so good, but yeah.
Yeah.
There's not much to it, really.
I feel like whatever their intent was sort of lost in animation. I think that was the joke. Like, the clouds are too realistically shaped like things.
Yeah, though I think for comedy's sake, the music is doing a lot of the work here.
Yeah, you know? you're watching a little boy fall in love with a head, so that's doing most of the work with the Beach Boys song. So we're back at Tom Landry Middle School. Bobby is much more confident than we saw him earlier in the show. He's no longer afraid of the giant women, and he's greeting all of the girls.
I liked, actually, in the montage, his cute trick of kicking the math book up to his hands. That was fun. I like that.
Because if he would bend down to pick it up, the girl would be even bigger. So,
but yeah, he's full of confidence just from talking to the head. Like, it's kind of sweet. It shows that you don't need to be terrified of girls. But also, when he introduces the idea of spin the bottle to him, it shows Bobby's innocence that he never thought of kissing that head until he realizes he needs to practice kissing. That's the only reason he'd do it.
Yeah, Joseph brings up that this will be a spin the bottle style party, which I never encountered as a kid. I assumed I would based on how much this device was used.
Well, I wasn't invited to many parties myself.
I mean,
so
I wasn't either, but it never came up.
Actually, man, did I ever go to a boy-girl party? I don't think I did. Mm. I mean, not until we were in Red Cup stage of boy-girl parties.
And then you didn't need a bottle to tell you what to do. Well, you kind of did.
I guess. I mean, I just kind of stood to the side. As a closeted teen, the fun is less, you don't want to get drunk, because then what if you say you like boys? Then you're in trouble. It's the fun is your enemy in those times. That's why you move away from home.
Exactly. It's what you're supposed to do. Peggy comes home with armfuls of groceries while Bobby plays spin the bottle with the head. And she's looking for Bobby. The house is dark. Mm-hmm. And she hears him behind the door saying, "It's just you and me."
Which,
and
he thinks it's the girl, this mystery girlfriend.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. In that earlier scene where Luann's like, Bobby's got a girlfriend, she's pulling off one of the head's hairs from his shoulder.
Oh, God.
So,
yeah. Also, I like, Bobby has worn this outfit a number of times since, but this, like, it reminds me of the Continental SNL.
His weird Hugh Hefner style, like, cosplay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird that he would have this sort of outfit, but Bobby's a very flamboyant boy who probably likes dressing up in costumes and stuff like that.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. This was when I noticed that in his room, like on his shelf, is like a Captain Hook kind of hook, which feels like that's another costume he just kind of hangs on to.
So there's some great screaming for the act break.
Fuck, it's good. Yeah.
I remember that being in the commercial for this episode.
Yeah, which really kind of blew it. I remember seeing that before I saw the episode, like, oh, well, I know what's happening here. But yeah, them screaming at each other and then the slamming of the door. Though the door slams almost a little too cartoony for KOTH.
Yeah, I think so.
But the also, speaking of animation, I don't think they knew what a ketchup bottle looked like, because it's kind of like a wine bottle, basically.
Yeah, I think whoever got that overseas didn't get a good enough, like, prop design or whatever, had to improvise, because I was like, why does Bobby have, oh, it's ketchup, okay.
I mean, hey, you know, Fred's a free business idea out there, though. Fancy ketchup in wine bottles. Start. I mean, you've seen, like, those maple syrup in wine bottles.
That's true.
Ketchup next.
Artisanal ketchup, so they're just in boring jars.
That's the next step they need to take.
So we come back after the act break, and Hank is in denial.
You must have got it wrong. Maybe he just fell on it or something.
Hank, he was kissing it. I saw it with my own two eyes. I'm going to be seeing it for the rest of my life.
Now, Peggy, it's not your fault.
Well, why'd you say that?
I just said it's not your fault.
Well, it did not need saying. I know it is not my fault. If anything, this is your fault. You made him go to that camp with no toilet doors.
Don't point your finger at me, woman. You're the one who parks him in front of the TV and makes him watch all them Muppets. They got frogs kissing pigs. What the hell did they think was going to happen?
We are not going to get anywhere by attacking each other. We have to do the sensible thing. We'll move to Berlin.
What?
Bobby will be accepted there. I read somewhere that Germans, they're very tolerant people. Their culture admires all kinds of freaks.
Our boy is not a freak. He's just confused. Now, I'm going to cut those apron strings you got him tied down with and set that boy straight, I tell you what.
I like, it makes sense that Hank would be anti-Muppet. I do like his, what do you think would happen?
I mean, the Muppets are far too whimsical for him.
Yeah.
It's clearly run by hippies with long hair, so he'd definitely hate it.
It's funny that everything I'm doing now is involving Muppets. Like, I'm watching the Defunct Land.
It's really great,
Jim Henson series. It's really good. Check it out on YouTube, Defunct Land. But also, now that I'm watching that, I'm seeing Muppets everywhere. So when you talked about the Muppets in this, I was like, oh my God.
You can't get away from them. This scene works exactly. Replace talking about puppets with if they had seen Bobby with gay porn.
Yeah.
It's the same structure. That's what they're talking about here.
And it's nice that even to the end of this episode, Peggy believes the worst in Bobby.
Yes,
she believes he is if that's your kink, go for it, but Peggy would prefer to have him not be into severed head making out sessions.
Yes. I love her saying, I'm going to be seeing it for the rest of my life.
People in Germany are very accepting.
And then also, Hank's very passive-aggressive, like, it's not your fault. She's like, I know it's not my fault. Like,
but she's thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
It's his fault.
He's saying the same. I mean, parents blame themselves, or they say, like, it's not, when I told my mom I was going to therapy, she was like, it's my fault, isn't it? I was like, no, it's fine, mom, don't, but it was her fault.
Oh,
no.
I thought you would just show her the other, the therapist notebook, it just says father on it.
it's
a Simpsons joke.
Yes, a little column A, God, that joke is so right. It is,
it was husband,
it's
though,
so
right?
Obvious. Yeah. Yeah, husband, it's
underlined. I love this. So now they're just afraid of seeing Bobby in any sort of compromising situation. So it's like, we're coming down the hall. And then it's like, that's us knocking.
Okay.
And then when he opens the door, Peggy is turned around.
It's
funny. A really good. I like him saying, that's us knocking.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
God damn it. It's so funny. Just the staging of it, the timing of it. And then Bobby also is just so annoyed too. He's like, yes, come in. Cause he knows they're judging him.
Yeah.
They know he's in trouble. Now in the next scene, I do think Bobby is being very honest about that's why he talks to the head and kisses the head. But in the real world, if I was Bobby caught with that, I would make up that lie. Like, I've got 2 hours till my dad comes home. Time to think of the best lie possible to explain why I was doing this thing that he wouldn't approve of.
Well, let's hear that clip.
Look, Bobby, I'm as open-minded as the next guy. But just so you know, most states won't let you marry a plastic head.
I don't want to marry it. Ugh. I just need it to practice my first kiss so I don't look like an idiot.
You're kissing a plastic head and you're afraid of looking like an idiot? Son, I'm doing this for your own good. You're just using this head as a crutch.
It's not a crutch, Dad. It's something I've come to rely on to help me through life.
Well, I'll make you a deal. Go to your party. Afterwards, if you still want this head, you can have it.
But I won't need it after the party.
Exactly.
So Hank locks up the head in the cabinet.
That's also my line in the show. It's not
crutch.
A crutch, Dad. It's something I've come to rely on to help me through life.
That has stuck with me since the airing of this episode.
That's exactly what a crutch is. That's why it's so funny. And also that he takes advantage. It's speaking of being short as a kid, I forgot the pain of like, they put it up higher than 4 feet. I can never get to this again.
Where's the step stool? Hidden.
Yeah. My family step stool couldn't go that high even then. It felt like quite a day when I was finally 5 feet tall and could reach all those things again.
You know, I don't think I'll have children, but my girlfriend is very short. so I can start hiding things down.
you can put her phone on top of the refrigerator and be like, "There you go." No, you'll get beat up.
She would beat me up though. That's very true.
Speaking of 50s film, I said earlier it felt like a Glenn or Glenda type thing. This bit of Bobby sneaking around in the house at night.
And the music, too, yeah.
It feels very 50s, like very 50s noir kind of film. And just the framing of Hank stepping into the camera.
Yeah, it's like, actually kind of spooky the way Hank... So basically what happens is Bobby is sneaking through the house at night. He gets to the kitchen. He clambers up the counter to get to the head, and he knocks out the silverware drawer, and Lady Bird starts barking. When it starts getting silent, he still hears snoring from the Hill bedroom. You cut to the Hill bedroom, and Peggy's side of the bed is occupied by Peggy, but Hank's is empty, and then he comes into frame. So I think part of the joke is like, no, Peggy was the one who was snoring.
The mannish snores were for Peggy, which, and it goes unsaid, but I would guess you could think that Hank is up late because of his long hair, too.
Yeah, he mentioned that earlier, but you get like a weird like little eye twitch from him, too.
Yeah. That's facial acting you don't normally get on Hank. I meant to compliment it earlier, but you know, on The Simpsons and then also in some King of the Hills, A and B stories are very separate, which is not like qualitatively a good or bad thing, but I do appreciate when they're interwoven better. And this one, there's not really A and B are kind of, I guess A is the doll head, but Luann's test is almost as important and they both depend on the other.
Yeah, I don't know if this is trite to say this, but I do think that Seinfeld changed the world of A and B plots, where before they could be isolated, but after Seinfeld became hugely popular, they're like, well, what if the twist was how do these stories intersect? Or like the payoff was seeing how well they intersect throughout the episode.
Yeah, I guess, you know, in Three's Company, you just were used to like, oh, this is the A story, this is the B story.
Yeah, what are the Ropers up to?
But yeah, instead, Seinfeld kind of turned it into more like a riddle that then surprises you by when they smash into each other. But yes, Hank confronting it. I also like that Bobby thinks he's going to get away with it when he smashes all of the silverware on the floor. Yeah. He thinks he won't be caught then.
Hank says it's time for some tough love and takes the head to the garage and saws it in half. And like as soon as he's done sawing it in half, he realizes that he really fucked up. Yeah. Because Luann is screaming.
That made me laugh watching it too, because when he took the head away, I was just thinking like, no, that's Luann's. That's not yours, Hank. And then only then does it hit him that he just fucked over Luann by cutting. And it's very disturbing, that head in half.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's meant as an Evil Dead 2 reference, but Evil Dead 2 has basically that same
scene. Right. So because of his transgressions, Hank has to sit in as the practice head for Luann's final. And here's that scene.
First, this is not the plastic head you were issued. Second, just look at the way you shaved against the grain here, here, and here. And these are the worst sideburns I've seen since Chair 3, which makes me suspect you cheated. F. That means you fail.
What a bitch. Don't cry, Luann. This is the best haircut I ever had. The hair is all nice and uniform, which is tough because I have bumps here and here.
I noticed. I layered on the upslopes and tapered on the down.
Yep, this is my all-time favorite haircut.
Thanks, Uncle Hank.
Oh.
Miss Platter, I'm sorry. I've been mean and unfair. I guess I just got so far from the hair and so into the whole power trip of running the academy. Mm-hmm. I forgot the most important principle of the beautician's art. Repeat business and referrals. You pleased your customer. You pass.
Bit of nepotism there. I mean, the customer was her uncle, but it's a nice ending.
Yeah, it's sweet. I mean, and then she even gets a very movie-like slow clap, too, which I thought they were going to under... I was like, okay, did they undercut this? And like, no, it's just...
Oh, yeah, me too. It's nice to have a moment of sincerity.
It almost feels like too much for Hank to go like, what a bitch, but that's what all the audience is saying, too.
I do like the butthead-style reading of like, what a bitch,
yes.
under his breath. It's something that Hank... Hank is really pushed to the edge here because he's saying it under his breath, but you wouldn't normally... hear Hank say bitch.
Yeah, he's had a hard time.
Yeah.
You're right. He's been pushed to the edge. You know, you mentioned butthead. That also reminds me of like Butthead has his own Beavis and Butthead have their own relationship with a hot hairdresser, don't they?
Oh, you're right. Top of the Mountain episode.
Yeah, they can't. They have an erection for the entire day because of that. But anyway, I love the gag that she thinks that she copied Bad Sideburns off of Chair 3.
Yeah, yeah, like you looked off your partner's or your neighbor's head.
Yeah, I like that a lot. But also, the beauticians are working on women's hair and Hank's hair. Like, that should cause a disqualification there, too, I think.
There's a bit of a handicap there, cutting that short hair.
And I also do love the phrasing of, I forgot what's important. Which should just be like the customer or your connection with people, but instead it's the much more boring repeat business and referrals.
It turns out Luanna's good bedside manner for being a hairdresser.
Yeah, it's sweet. I mean, that is how those kind of movies end too, where it's like you don't pass. I mean, honestly, it's pretty much the same as Bart gets an F where she's like, oh, no, actually you didn't fail because you did this one thing.
And this would be the end of Luann's story in the Academy, which would end in season one. It was a revolutionary idea at the time for a sitcom like this to have continuity. So after this, Luann would do some hairdressing. I can't remember when and how, but eventually she wants to go back to college.
Yeah,
and then she eventually drops out of college, which is a very realistic story, and goes back to hairdressing. So there's a lot going on with the lives of these characters throughout the seasons, even though they don't age.
Yeah, I like, Luann grows and changes is probably more than any other character in the show, partially because, as you talked about before, they thought they needed to write Brittany Murphy on the show, off of the show. And Luann goes from trailer park trash to happily married white trash to Lucky.
So we're back at the Hill House, and Peggy comes in to see Bobby trying to coax Lady Bird towards him.
Yeah.
At first I read it as Peggy misreading, you know, when you're like, come here, doggy. Come here, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But I honestly think now, upon watching it again, like, no, Bobby wanted to practice on Lady Bird right before he left for the party.
I think he did.
Yeah, even though the joke is Peggy is assuming the worst of him, I still think Bobby wanted to kiss that dog on the mouth.
Know, maybe we're ending up like Peggy here, though, assuming the worst of Bobby, too.
It's a great moment of silent awkwardness, but in this next scene, Peggy cannot let go, literally.
Bobby, your father told me you were just kissing the head for practice. Now, I know he made that up to protect me. But I am your mother, and I have decided that I am going to love you no matter what.
Okay.
I realize I am just as much to blame for your condition as the media and the devil. I have been overprotective. You're not a baby anymore. You are going to have a long and interesting life ahead of you, and it's time for me to just let go. Just let go so you go on. You go to the party. That's right. Just spread your wings and fly away, little bird.
And she literally can't let go. He's dragging her out of his room.
That really got me. I love that. I mean, also, the way Peggy says, now I know he made that up to protect me.
Peggy is sure she's right about the situation.
We're getting closer to real Peggy, too, of just like, no, I'm certain of this. I'm being lied to. You definitely are a freak, and I love you no matter how freakish you are. And also you do get a little bit of the religiousness of them too. She's like, definitely the devil's making you do this.
They really like making Peggy say the devil. Like, oh, he's funny. The devil.
Oh, the devil. Yeah. The devil. It's a funny thing to hear in a southern accent. I like it too, but just also Bobby's like, okay. Like he knows he can't convince her either. So he just, that okay is him going like, my mom will always think I'm a freak. Like, oh boy.
I like that Bobby is less ashamed than he is frustrated. Mm-hmm. Because I think the secret of Bobby is he's never ashamed of himself.
Yeah. He can be confused, but he doesn't really feel shame. I like that. Though I do, you know, this brings back another episode. The one where he has to shower at gym and he really doesn't like to. And Hank knows it's not right to enjoy showering around other men, but it's also the rights of the gym, so you have to do it. And he just tells Bobby, like, you just stare at the floor and count the tiles. That's what you do. And then it's finally over. Like, clearly Hank hated having to shower in front of other men too, but it's just the rules.
All that nudity.
Well, I mean, it also, it is one of those, like, most locker room kind of gray area of like, is this very straight or very gay? What are we doing here?
Reminds me of another Beavis and Butthead episode where they wouldn't take a shower after gym class.
I mean, it's correct. You shouldn't have to take a shower. I never did.
I never did.
I don't care if I stank all school.
I took summer gym, so it's for winter, summer gym.
By the third year I had to take gym, you could turn it into study hall, and I just didn't do shit. And that's
you're giving your brain a workout.
Well, really, I was just listening to my Weezer mixtape over and over again on my secret headphones.
Giving your heart a workout with those beautiful songs. But so Bobby is headed to Joseph's party. He is spooked away by a giant woman. The one that we see the most in this episode, giant woman. Giant girl, rather.
I like her design, too, that she has, like, zits on her face. Like, she's clearly an... Bobby is putting so much fear in her when she's just, like, an awkward tall girl who is as afraid of this as he is, I think. Or who knows? Maybe she's full of confidence. She doesn't feel bad about her zits at all.
But Connie arrives to save the day. And I like how... So it's like... Hank's approach didn't work. It's like too much pressure. Peggy's approach didn't work. Not enough pressure, or just like avoiding any sort of social situation where Bobby would, you know, have romantic feelings. But Bobby and Connie, like, taking it in their own hands to figure things out is what works in this episode.
This is such a sweet scene.
I really like it.
Aren't you going to Joseph's party?
I can't. It's a makeout party, and my dad took away my plastic hat.
What a buzzkill. I've been practicing too. Look.
What a great idea!
I want my first kiss to be perfect. You know, something sweet I can keep with me my whole life. Hey, Bobby, can we practice on each other?
You want to kiss me?
No, just practice.
Oh, okay.
Close your eyes.
This is stupid!
Let's try it with our eyes open.
Was that right?
I think so. Do I have any hickeys?
I don't see anything.
Han Jr., come home for dinner. Your prawn's getting cold.
Well, I better get to that party.
Hey, good luck.
Thanks.
Very cute scene.
Oh, I just said aw the whole time watching it.
It was adorable. It kind of borders on like a little too cutesy, but I still like it because it's very true to the characters and that neither one of them is getting any sort of like sexual satisfaction, even as a child out of this kiss. It's just like, well, I guess this is what a kiss is.
Neither's trying to trick the other into kissing them. It's not like a sinister motive or anything. Like it's more like they both just innocently arrive at the conclusion like, well, what if we just kissed each other? Well, okay.
I like that Bobby is like, the hand, of course, because she says, I've been kissing my hand as practice. He's like, oh, God, why didn't I think of that?
I also love Connie's zero reaction to hearing that his dad took his plastic head away.
Oh, yeah. She's that's like, so underplayed that I didn't realize that was a joke.
Bummer. That's too bad. Yeah.
I think she knows at this point Bobby's weird.
I think so. Yeah. Well, so that also makes me think Connie is obviously smarter than Bobby. I think partially she is... She knows she's tricking him just a little bit into giving her. Like the way she says, I want my first kiss to be special. Hey, Bobby. Well, I think in that moment she realized, I bet if I asked Bobby to kiss me, he'd do it.
Yeah, I think maybe she knows a little more than Bobby in this scene. She's not tricking him in a dirty way or a selfish way, but she's just like, I have feelings for Bobby, but I don't quite understand them yet. And we'll see that develop over the course of the next few seasons in the show.
Yeah, I mean...
Until they break up.
They knew this when they first introduced Connie, that she was supposed to be his kind of first crush and all that. I like, too, that the mom and dad are trying to protect her from boys, and here she is secretly kissing him while avoiding the party. I do really identify with Bobby's standing outside of a party and working up your courage to go in.
Yeah.
I had that a few times. I still think if it's with a bunch of strangers there, I pretty much just don't like going to parties with strangers. But if I do, it does take like a minute of like psych up of like, okay, you can be around other people. You don't know them.
And then after the party's over, I'm like, yeah, that was actually fun. I like talking to people. And then when the next party comes around, I'm like, I can't go to this.
Yeah, I can't
please.
Go to, oh God. You know what? I think I'm just going to ghost on this party. Fuck it. Fuck it.
Please invite me to all your parties.
It hurts my feelings if I'm not invited because it doesn't give me the opportunity to ghost, damn it.
I need the practice in case I want to play a millionaire at parties. If this Patreon thing doesn't work out. So I don't have any clips anymore because the rest of the show is just very visual, but Bobby is at the party. Everyone there is very silent and awkward. It's not just Bobby. Everyone is terrified.
Yeah. It reminds me of Lard of the Dance from Simpsons, where
yeah.
these kids realize they're not ready. Like, they all felt like they have to play Spin the Bottle, but nobody wants to do it because it's scary.
But Bobby, after getting his kiss from Connie, is finally building up the motivation to kiss somebody. Unfortunately, the bottle lands on Nancy. Yes. And the last shot of this entire season that aired is Bobby lunging. A first-person shot, you are Bobby lunging at Nancy as she's arguing with Dale about, you know, who let them play Spin the Bottle.
Yeah, because Dale's trying to be a buzzkill on it while Nancy wants to give them space to grow. She's like, come on, just let them play their little kissing game. And Dale's
like talking about, it's like, it's the damn sugar.
Yeah, don't sugar me, sugar. Yeah, yeah. There was a little sugar. It's kind of under the audio. But yeah, it is an odd shot to end on of like echoed screaming of Nancy being jumped at by Bobby.
I mean, it is kind of gross that she's being assaulted by this small child, but it's innocent, and it's played like sort of like a horror movie, sort of, too.
It felt like the third time the episode had to do a kind of filmic treatment to it, too. And that's, and also, too, that Bobby isn't doing this because, like, he has a crush on his friend's mom or something. He merely has to respect the rules of Spin the Bottle. He's like, he worked up all his courage for this kiss. The bottle landed on Nancy. He's got to do it. That's the rules.
This episode is another great one. It was a good one to end the season on. I can see why. It's sort of like the most outlandish premise in terms of character relations and what Bobby's up to. I think it was a good one to go out on for 97, the end of the season.
It's a really sweet one that also, it deals with, the show takes so many great swings at doing stories about life in surprising ways. Like a child growing up and, you know, having romantic interests, that's been dealt with in countless stories. Mm-hmm. But to find a way to do it with a plastic head, that's clever.
Yeah.
That's very
again,
clever.
Something I've never seen before. It's all about specificity. And that's what King of the Hill is all about, finding humor in those very specific ideas.
Yeah. Yeah. And all the parent stuff in here really struck me, too. I wonder if David Zuckerman went through similar things with his own parents arguing about him or trying to grow up.
It made me happy that my parents opted out of that aspect of my life. They're like, we're not going to talk about it. We're not going to ask you about it. No pressure from us on anything. It was nice.
They just counted on the TV to teach you about it.
Exactly. I think my mom even said that. It's like, you watch cable, you know how it works. Just use protection, is what she told me. It still does. But thanks for listening to Talking of the Hill. By the way, you're like, hey, this is the end of the season. Is this the end of Talking of the Hill? No, because we have one more episode. As I've stated before, we are doing The Company Man. It's production episode 12 of this season, and it's a very important episode, and it's on the first season DVD, so it's included in this first season treatment. Like on Talking Futurama, we did all the episodes, even though three of them aired in season two, three or four of them aired, so we want to do a complete run of the first production season of King of the Hill with this podcast.
Yeah, in all our miniseries so far, it's been DVD rules, not television broadcast rules. We did it with The Critic as well. So we're sticking to it with this one. And I am glad we're doing that one. I have already watched it.
Oh,
I
me mean, too. Yeah.
Buck Strickland is so great. Fatherton. It's a fun episode about Texas and stereotypes. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm glad we're doing one more just to make this this sweet Texas tea last just a little bit longer.
And I am going to miss Talking of the Hill. It's not over yet. We have got one more. But a question I get a lot, we got this on Talking Futurama, is, you know, oh, I really like this miniseries you're doing. Can you do more? And the answer is yes, eventually. So right now we are at the 2 miniseries a year level. So this is our first one for the year. The second one will start in around August, and you'll get to vote on that, which show that we do for that. But King of the Hill will not be on the poll for that miniseries. It will return in a future poll. We want to give people who maybe don't enjoy King of the Hill as much as Futurama or other series a chance to vote on different shows. But perhaps Futurama will be back in the running. It wasn't in this last set of polling that we did for miniseries,
because we wanted to give another show a chance. So yeah, we'll. But keep your eyes open for that poll in the future.
Yeah.
But and stick with us on the Patreon. We've got tons of great stuff still a coming.
As for me, like, I love doing Talking Futurama. I love doing Talking of the Hill. If we had the bandwidth to do those two series and Talking Simpsons and What a Cartoon in 1 week.
Yes, yeah.
I would love to do all of those, but right now we are just two people with occasional help from outsiders, and we're doing what we can, and we're happy to do it. But
we love doing it, but yes, we every... Three podcasts a week is a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot of podcasts. Well, and then we do all the side stuff too, you know, interviews and like we're planning a trip in July, like secret preview,
yes.
Planning another podcast trip in Los Angeles. So look forward to those.
So we're doing as much as we can for you with our current output, and we hope that you appreciate it because we appreciate you giving to the Patreon and unlocking shows like this because it gives us a chance to treat these shows with the scrutiny and respect they deserve, especially a show like King of the Hill that is often shrugged away as some weird, boring show.
Yeah, I've read a lot of great comments from people saying that they didn't give King of the Hill a shot when it was airing next to The Simpsons in their childhood, and now we've helped them rediscover it and see what a special show it is. So I love hearing that.
So thanks again for listening, folks, and we will see you next week for the final episode for now of this miniseries, The Company Man. We'll see you then.
Ashley? Looking good, Maria. I'll catch you later, Bonnie.
Man, when did you get to be so slick?
What do you mean? Yo, Charisse, you stone cold fox, what up?